This episode of Film Sack brought to you by Harry's, for guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now. Go to harrys.com and just in time for this gift season, for new and existing customers, get $5 off the limited edition Winter Winston set by entering the code FILMSACKHOLIDAY. That's FILMSACKHOLIDAY, one word, at checkout. That's at harrys.com and the offer code FILMSACKHOLIDAY.
Police have yet to come up with a single eyewitness. Only a few vague reports of young boys or teenagers at the scenes have been filed. But whoever is behind these crimes, one thing is certain. These are much more than just a series of random, isolated incidents.
Do you like penicillin on your pizza? This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to welcome back to Film Sack. I didn't like that at all. Welcome back to Film Sack, the very film show that minds the very film entertainment kind of things until mankind says stop. It's episode 224. My name is Scott Johnson. I'm joined today by Randy. Don't look at his unsightly bathtub ring, Jordan.
Oh, aloha, Scott and Brian, in the unfortunate absence of my podcasting partner and dear friend Brian Dunaway this week. I have accomplished what can only be called a spiritual mind meld with Mr. Dunaway.
Yeah.
And what I decided meant that meant this greeting needs to be something that proposes a better future. So, okay. Right. What it comes to is one of these ideas is the next $1 billion idea.
All right.
And I'm going to present you a few here, and I need to know which one it is. Here we go.
All right.
Primary school awkward karate kittens. College maimed boxing chinchillas. Midlife crisis angry monkeys.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I think you're going to like this one. Elderly deformed samurai Furbies.
Wow.
Huh?
Yeah, but then you got to yell, stay in school or something like that.
Don't do drugs.
Do stay in school.
Yeah, do stay in school and don't do drugs.
We would all be better off. The three of us would all be better off if we were still in school.
I agree. Hey, Brian Dunaway is out. We'll talk more about that in a second. Also with us, Mr. Brian, we get it. He really likes pizza Ibbot.
So here's what I'm thinking for my evil henchmen. By the way, I'm not doing the Shredder voice. This is Skeletor doing the Shredder.
Okay, that much was clear, but go ahead.
So here's what I'm thinking for my evil henchmen. I'm going to recruit teenage boys. And when we're not robbing people and causing mayhem in the streets, I'm going to have them headquartered in my evil lair. Yes, we'll have pinball and skateboarding and spray paint and video games. And bubble gum, lots and lots of bubble gum.
Wow, that man, that the trope of the never-ending henchman was really stretched to its breaking point.
Not only that, but the 90s, the very 90s specific trope of the lair where all of them go, like Hackers or a dozen others of these movies, is this wonderland of arcade games and skateboarding and fighting and amazing. Yep.
Bad guys don't necessarily open up an evil lair. They really just kind of open up an after-school program.
Yeah. They open up a jolly come give us a quarters arcade or whatever. And I was surprised there wasn't like a bowling alley and, you know, 10 other attractions. It was ridiculous.
If they had animatronic monkeys in there, it could have been a Chuck E. Cheese's for as much as it mattered.
I never thought the trope of the never-ending henchman would meet the where are these kids' parents trope.
Yeah. Well, you had your Sam Rockwell in there as one of the kids, right?
And what?
Yeah, you didn't notice that? Yeah. He's the one at the end that kind of gave up finally where everything was and what was going on. He was
He's the one also who stood up. So that's the same kid who kind of stood up and said, hey, this is our family.
Yep, that's him. Yep.
Oh my God.
Sam mother effing Rockwell, dude. Right smack in the middle of your teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the movie. which I could tell you more, but I won't because Scott Fletcher will.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Four turtles retreat to the city sewers to train as crime-fighting ninjas in this live-action adventure based on the animated series. With help from their master, a mutant rat, the reptilian teens battle an evil warlord.
Makes it sound so much cooler than I think it is.
Well, wow. I thought he was going to stick with the thing that I hated the most about the movie, which was the character of old Japanese sensei being voiced by not even remotely Asian person putting on Asian affectation. It was really bothersome.
And you know who that is there? That's Kevin Clash, the voice of Elmo.
Elmo.
And he was the, I guess he had his hand up his butt too. He was doing the,
some puppeteering.
The puppeteering is what they call it. I think they prefer puppeteering and not hand up the butt.
It really, really bothered me. And I had to keep telling myself, this is not a newer movie. This is the kind of thing that happened back, you know, in the day. Mm-hmm. And of course, in the day, what, 1990? 90. Is that where we're at here?
90, yeah.
Yeah.
Gee.
You know how I know it was 90? Hold on. Here's how I know it was 90. Check it out, baby. This may as well be... I mean, the Axel Foley movie number two in a row.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Beverly Hills Cop, I think, used exactly that same instrument.
Yeah.
There should be an alternate name for that instrument. It should be called like the 80-wah or something.
80-wah is pretty good because I feel like it existed between 86, most prominently, through 86 through about 94.
Mm-hmm.
And then just went away. And before that, didn't exist in exactly the same way. It was a very specific time. And I feel like we have assigned... So a lot of people are nostalgic about the 80s. I think we are. And I feel like we think all of the 80s was that. And yeah. I don't think it was. I think it was like 86 at its peak. And then the rest of it was just kind of either building up to that or peeling off from that. Well,
and there were Oscar films at the time using full orchestras. Oh, yeah. It wasn't like it was only this.
Sure. You got things like not Stand and Deliver, Dead Poets Society, because they stood and delivered. That's why I was thinking of that. But that thing is synthed to hell and back. Like it kind of ruins it. Apples. Yeah.
And let's be clear. This is a perfect example of having fun with that kind of vibe, man.
Sure.
There is never a moment in this movie when the people making it weren't just having the blast of their lives.
It did seem like people are having fun. Now, I understand, as I say the following words, there is a decent, sizable group of listeners to this show who would consider themselves 90s kids, okay? In the way that I consider myself an 80s kid. You grew up in the 80s, you had a certain thing that you totally glommed onto, and you think Goonies is the best thing ever made, right? You grow up in the 90s, I feel like this is a touchstone for them. I hear it constantly from people who had their formative years in the 90s who say that the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles first movie especially was a huge deal for them, and that they love it, and they love it still to today. I'm just here to tell you that I'm about 10 years out of who they were aiming at. I was 20 that year. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking it was awful at the time. Now, in retrospect, I'm actually kind of in a weird bit of admiration for what was at the time an independent film, made a ton of money, and looks pretty good for its independent roots. Now, you say that, but then again, they're hiring Henson's group to do, you know, all the puppeteer stuff and the masks and the animatronics and stuff. And, you know, they've got hands in expensive cookie jars, but still, it was still considered a small independent movie compared to what you'd get from the big, heavy Hollywood type stuff that would hit in the summer. So I have some respect for it now. I still don't think it's very good, though. I think it's kind of crappy. But what I'm trying to get to here is maybe a broader conversation about why Goonies is great and this is bad to me. Is it just purely that I aged out of it? Or...
You must have started out aged out of it, though.
Maybe. Like, maybe.
Okay, so here's the thing. I'm younger than you, right?
I
was
comics.
An actual teenager when this movie came out.
Yeah.
Or I was a teenager barely when the TV show started.
Sure.
And I'm here to tell you, it's a huge reminder that something called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is actually aimed at preteens.
Yeah.
And that's kind of hard to get your head around.
But you're only like, 5 years younger than me. So let's just take that as an example. Is that enough time? And I'm not saying it isn't. Maybe it is. But is that enough time for me to feel that way? Or should I feel like a remnant of it should have been interesting to me, because I read the comics when those were new and independent and black and white and gritty and hard and all that. I read those, thought they were amazing at the time. this thing came out. I don't know. I think something out of these puppet heads and stuff.
You can't expect to like something just because you liked it in another medium, you know, like liking Transformers toys versus liking the Transformer cartoon versus liking the Michael Bay films,
yeah,
or liking the comics, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comics, which I have. Never watched the cartoon, never saw the movies until this one, till now.
Nice.
And oh boy.
And these things can double back on themselves. Like as a 30 something, I never really cared much for the Transformers toys. But then Rescue Bots comes along and I'm like, this is a really cool little cartoon. And then I get my hands on an actual Rescue Bot and I love it.
Yeah.
I think it's a great toy.
Yeah.
You know, so these things, it's never too late. My point was going to be, I have never seen one iota of anything Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles until this week.
Oh, what?
I have never watched a movie or a TV show or read a comic.
So for once, someone is even more brand new to something than I am.
Wow. I came into this with the assumption you at least played like the arcade game or something. Nope. Or none of that? Wow.
And this is why I'm saying that it's important to recognize this was aimed at like 11 or 12 year olds. Because instead of trying to access my inner 16-year-old who may not have really liked it at the time because it was a little old for it, I was able, watching it this week, to access my inner 11-year-old, and I had so much fun.
That's great.
It was just cool. With the exception of the weirdness of it all, there were things, you know, like, I'm sorry, but I will never know what's the name of the one that wears the fuchsia mask.
Do it by the weapons, right? Like the nunchuck wielding dude is, actually, I don't know, but I think that's how they do it. I think that's how it's done. One has a staff, one has nunchucks, one has the knifey things. And
you've hit upon my biggest problem with this.
Yeah.
Is that when you've got a team like the Avengers or like even the Fantastic Four, let's say, you know, we're going old school Fantastic Four. And for the most part, they all dress the same. Thing can't. He's just got to wear those little blue boxers because he's, you know, whatever.
Right.
But for the most part, they all dress the same. They still have distinct enough personalities that it's like...
And everything. Well,
yeah. Powers. I mean, and I'm discounting the powers. I'm saying, okay, let's say you do have four teenaged turtles,
yeah,
who have studied martial arts and maybe carry different weapons. But the fact that they've all got exactly the same personality, it seems like, maybe with some subtle, like, oh, Raphael's more brooding, mm-hmm, and Leonardo takes long showers, whatever.
Leonardo's supposed to kind of be leadership material. This movie doesn't really get into that very much, but he's kind of like keeping everybody straight. Yeah. The other Donatello and the other one are just pizza heads or whatever. That's pretty consistent. And then Raphael's always brooding. You're right about that. He's always off, like pissed, doing his own thing. Like, I can't stand you guys. I got to get away. Got to get out of here.
It was very clear that there was only so much the movie could do. You know, like I from the get go, when I first saw these four characters, I'm like, okay, it's clear the movie is going to have to cut some corners on characterization and backstory. And I'll never know which one is Giuliani and what his deal is. You know what I mean? Like, it's clear.
Right.
But as the movie went along, it stuck so firmly to this thing, like, this is cool and fun and exciting, you know, that it didn't matter whether I ever knew which one was Capablanca. I just kept going and going with the next thing and the next thing. And by the way, the movie doesn't have a plot. It's amazing.
Not really,
I couldn't believe there was no story. There was a little backstory, which helped a ton. Because if you don't tell me some reason how these creatures came to be, I'm going to be just upset the entire time.
Sure. I don't know since you've never seen any of this, and Brian, I guess, I'm going to guess you haven't seen it either, but that animated one that was a few years ago, either of you see that? I guess not.
The recent one.
The Pixar, or not Pixar, but I mean the computer generated animated. Yeah.
I really liked that a lot. And not just because Patrick Stewart was in it. It was actually quite good, and I think the characterizations are better. I think it's just a more kind of true to the core of what those characters are supposed to be, or at least kind of their origins and stuff. I found this to just feel like a weird puppet movie that had magic they're not supposed to have. And
I'm here to tell you, Scott Johnson, I just peeked at TMNT, that 7-year-old film.
Yeah.
This looks better. These characters, these turtles look freaking great.
Really?
By comparison with the computer generated ones. Again, coming at it from this is my first experience at all of this. I'm telling you, I was amazed. I thought, oh, now I'm going to look at this 2007 version and it's going to be even better. Nope. I disagree. I think the turtles in the 1990 version were really good, really like spot on, looked good on film in every scene. Admittedly, the whole movie was kind of dark. They didn't want to put too much light on those characters.
I noticed that too. Yeah. Well, you can't, because the rubber would have come out. Like, it just wouldn't have looked right. Because they were occasionally they would land on their shell and the shell would mush just as much as their arm did. And you're just like, oh, okay, these are suits. But I have big respect for the level of fidelity on that stuff for the year this came out. That's impressive as hell.
Yeah, the animatronics in the faces, the level of controllability of their facial expressions and that sort of thing, hugely impressive. And you're saying that's Henson. Technology.
And I loved the TV show Jim Henson's Creature Workshop.
Oh, that's huge. That's big on that. What was the one, the storyteller one? That's not that one, was it? What was it called? Where he for a while it was Michael Gambone, aka Dumbledore, with a dog. And before him, it was John Hurt and another dog. Anyway, I don't know how they're split between seasons or something, but they would tell these like amazing fairy tales.
It was called The Storyteller.
Oh, I love that.
That was actually before this.
Definitely
something that's older than Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I love that stuff, man.
I've never even heard of that.
I want to say that was before, that may have been before Jim died. What'd you say?
I do know this. Yeah, we talked about this before on the show, and I checked out an episode or two of it, or it a YouTube video of it.
It sounded like you said, beep, beep, like that. Beep beep.
Just now, or yeah, when I was interrupting?
Because I think when you were starting to say something, you stopped short, but you went beep beep. That was great. Anyway, the cartoon had Chris Evans, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Mako, who we all love, Mako played Splinter, Kevin Smith, Patrick Stewart, Lawrence Fishburne. I mean, these are and voice work of Nolan North, John DiMaggio. Like, it's a big deal. I like that a lot. So I guess what I'm doing is I'm going to take the counterpoint and say, and you should see it so you can compare it. But I think that was more fun and more appropriate of a medium for this story. I think going live action is a mistake. And I'm not saying that this isn't done to some degree of success and they did as best as you can. But I feel like a 3D animated film is where the turtles belong moving forward.
Wow. I mean, because considering the cast, like, I can't name one person from this 1990 film. I mean, obviously, we've named Kevin Clash, where Sam Rockwell was in it barely.
Right.
But, like, they managed to cast a bunch of unknowns. And why not? Why pay any money for essentially voice actors that are teenagers?
Remember Judith Hogue?
The big name for me in seeing this was Elias Koteas, the guy who was the bald guy in Some Kind of Wonderful.
And look at that guy's list. Okay, I hated him in this, by the way. I want to mention that.
Yeah,
but he is plenty busy and lots of really great credits. Like, that guy works in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. He's in that Killing Show. He's great on there. Chicago Fire, Chicago PD, which he's currently on. He was in a bunch of movies like Benjamin's Button or whatever the hell that was. Who's Eating Benjamin's Button? Thin Red Line, Shutter Island. Like, he's in big movies and does a lot of work. He is terrible in this, and not because he's there. It's because it's just bad casting. Yeah. He's a terrible trope. He's supposed to be Eddie Vedder on who goes saves people by night. It's awful. His character freaking sucks.
What are you, some kind of punker? Are you some kind of punker?
Punker.
How a director doesn't stop and say, let's change that word in the script.
Yeah. Or how they made a homosexual joke. That went like this. Yeah. He goes,
they called him agoraphobic.
He goes, you're a claustrophobic. One of the surfer ninjas told him. He goes, what? I don't even look at guys. Now, that is that would be a bad joke on its own if he would have said, you're a chloroform or something.
Yeah.
Where he thought it meant, oh, you're calling me homosexual. It would have, the word would have been you are a homophobe.
Yes,
which would mean he would say, "I'm not a I am not. I have plenty of gay friends." That's what that's the answer to that accusation. Instead, he makes it sound like he's being called gay. It is 1990. I get it, but those jokes were terrible, like terrible, just terrible.
They were really terrible jokes, and like I say, I blame the director here because directors are in control a lot more when they're working with kid actors, younger actors. Yeah. You put a lot more pressure on the director to make sure that they get it right, and you stop and say, okay, let's change a word in the script and we'll make it a lot better. This director, Steve Barron, his entire history was music videos. Yeah. You would never stop a band and say, would you change that lyric? I mean, you just like, he was used to doing something, and he moved over to feature films and kept doing the same thing, kept doing the not fixing it as he went along. And it shows, man. There's so many little spots in this film where you're like scratching your head. Like, how did that make it into the final film?
Well, before we get completely off Sam Rockwell, I just want to mention this. He obviously now is, you know, widely respected, great character actor, amazing guy. He's in movies and people go, oh, Oscar buzz, right? He's just great. Love him and everything. This just goes to show someone's got to start somewhere, because right. His first shot at anything was as, I can only assume, as a child actor, because he was born in 68. Movie first thing he was in was 79, Joan Crawford's Children, a miniseries. Then he was in The Equalizer Show, which I loved, as a character named Slick mm-hmm. in 1988, almost 10 years later. Then you got Clown House, Dream Street, Last Exit to Brooklyn. In 1990, ABC After School Special, he played Jason in Over the Limit, and then Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Everybody's got to start someplace.
Yeah.
And it wasn't and it until, like, what?
It goes on. He has years and years of that kind of thing yep. after this,
yep.
before he finally starts getting into...
What would you call Safe Men, maybe? I'm trying to think where his big Green Mile,
Galaxy
I guess?
Quest was the first place I remember seeing him.
Oh, wow. That's way down his list.
It is, yeah. I mean, that's like 10 years after
this. If I'm going to pick it, I'm going to say Green Mile was where he really nailed it, because he's that crazy inmate.
Oh, he won some minor awards for Lawn Dogs 2 years before that.
Lawn Dogs. I don't remember that at all.
Freaking crazy fantasy indie film.
But look at this, 8 years later, though, is what I'm saying. It's like, whoa, how far hath he come since then? And he's amazing in like all this other stuff, like mm-hmm. Moon. Do you know he was in a movie in 2002 called 13 Moons? And then eventually he's in a ship movie called Moon.
I think he's a great example of just keeping at it. Just work, get better, keep trying, keep getting cast, keep getting you got to have the right agent, make the right decisions. And you eventually become somebody who can do anything you want to do.
Someone who can be in Moon, because Moon was great.
Moon was great.
All right. So let's see. Here's some trivia for you here. Highest grossing independent film of all time, made over $133 million in domestic box office at the time. You adjust that for inflation.
And this was when independent meant something. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't ever get to set that record ever again. Like, nope. There's a cutoff point. And past like 2001, 2002 or something, there's no more independent films.
Yeah, it's like saying most collected comic books after 1995, it just this diminishing return as comic books changed and digital's crept in, and now there's no big deal. Hey, I own Spawn issue 300. Who gives three shits?
once in a great while, some people in Denmark, get together and make a tremendous independent film. But it's just not it's not what it used to be. Mm-hmm. It used to be that people who would otherwise be working in the studio system went and made a film outside of that.
Yeah.
And we called it an independent film. And it would play at an art house, and you'd have to drive into the city to go to a little crappy theater to see an independent film. It's just not – it doesn't exist anymore.
Who was the I always forget. It's the same as Lord of the Rings, New Line Cinema.
Mm-hmm.
This is back when they were straight up nothing but like indie movies and barely making it like week to week. Like, oh, that company's going to fold.
And then they were purchased by Time Warner in 96.
Yeah.
And, Time Warner eventually gets purchased by an internet company.
Oh my gosh. Who did? Oh yeah. AOL. Duh.
Like I'm telling you it's just the end of there. I'm going to actually say 96. That's
you just reminded me that AOL technically owns Batman now.
Well, they,
they do. They own DC. They own everything. They own Warner.
Nobody owns Batman.
No, I think Warner Brothers got reasserted in like 2008 or something.
That could be. I don't know how that went.
AOL. And AOL is just a part of Warner Brothers now. Yeah, Warner Brothers Entertainment is the company. And
all right.
AOL got bumped way down to to holding forth at the same level as things like Castle Rock Entertainment and Warner Brothers Interactive.
Sure. It's all changed now. Josh Pace, who played Raphael, suffers from severe claustrophobia. I like men.
Oh, no.
After filming his scenes, he would have to take the helmet off very quickly. He also is the only actor in turtle costume to also voice his character. So that's interesting. That was all done in post, but yeah, he did both. Mm-hmm. The Foot Clan is a parody of the Hand, a clan of ninjas from Marvel Comics. Ibbot, I thought you'd appreciate that.
I did. I didn't realize that the Hand was purely a Marvel Comics thing. I mean, that's the group that Elektra was part of, and that I'm trying to think of who else. Ronan, the Hawkeye's kind of alter character, right, in later Avengers years went up against.
Yep.
I never realized that the Hand was purely a Marvel thing. I thought that was something kind of taken from real mythology.
Yeah,
real.
I thought that was what are the Illuminati kind of idea? I always thought it was like one of those.
Right, or like we had this 20 years of all Asian bad guys being called the Triad. Right.
Always Asian, always bad.
So it's probably a real thing that just got borrowed so much that it ceased to be relevant as a real thing, you know?
Mm, yep. Jim Henson, whose workshop... Now, I don't believe this one because I think Henson had died by now, but I'll read it anyway. Didn't he die in 89? Maybe they were making it then. Well, anyway.
Jim Henson is gone, yes.
Jim Henson said, supposedly, according to this, his workshop provided the movie's turtle costumes was reportedly upset about the level of violence in the finished film. So I want to talk about this for a sec. Whether that's true or not, whether Henson cared or not, I don't know. But I didn't think it was that violent. Like, it seemed kind of standard fare, and I'm trying not to let the last 20 years of films get in the way of what I think is violent or not.
Desensitize your opinions. Yeah, no, it didn't feel as dark as a couple of things in that trivia section on IMDb would make it out to be.
Mm-hmm. You think maybe that's because, Brian, they were making it for kids, and kids' fare just had a different standard for what was acceptable then? Because today you could argue that you're all going to see The Hobbit, and that is a kid's movie. It's not a kid's specific movie, but it's a movie that kids are included in the group it's intended for, in a way. And that's some violent fare. I think back then maybe it was like, well, this is a comic book thing. We hadn't had a resurgence of comic book movies. Mm-hmm. You know, it must have seemed worse because if you really truly were aiming for kids, maybe you aimed more directly at them then and less broadly like now. I don't know.
It could be. It seems, I mean, even when you look at the original source material, Gray, you know, the black and white comic book, it's gritty, but it's a parody of Daredevil. It's a parody of Frank Miller.
Sure.
And it doesn't seem as dark looking at that as 100 other things that were out at that time, right?
Yeah, I would agree. I don't know why it's that big a deal.
This is kind of why Brian Dunaway and I are making fun of the name of the thing, because it you can't get too far away from the silliness of this name and concept.
Well, that's why you're still connected to him through your brain right now, spiritually. Got it. Okay, all right.
Your mind melt.
I should mention Brian Dunaway is totally fine. Everything's good. He just had a family thing come up and at last minute sort of couldn't make it. I just want to make sure people aren't all worried about him. He's good. Anyway, so yeah, you're connected to him now. What is he saying? Tell us, Randy.
But you know what I'm saying? Like the name, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, is insane. It's ridiculous. It's hard. I found it really hard to come up with names that were more ridiculous. Like, you know, like college maimed boxing chinchillas. Like, you realize it's actually not that ridiculous as this name.
Yeah.
So, sure, it can have some gritty elements, but you're clearly, I mean, you're trading on the whole ninja craze of the 80s, which we've talked about and we've watched Ninja Movie on FilmSack before.
Sure.
You are aiming at 12-year-olds, period.
Yep.
And so you either embrace that and make sure that it's PG-rated and make sure that, you know, the violence is never that violent, and it isn't. It was actually pretty amazing to me how often people were fighting and there was no resolution to the fight. At all.
Yeah.
No one won. I'm like, what's going on?
It's just a matter of getting knocked out of frame is really how you win in this movie.
Why does the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle named Rodriguez have a long stick? He never hits anybody with it.
Rodriguez.
It's a burden. It's a burden on him. And the same thing with the nunchucks. What a horrible thing to have to be constantly trying to hold on to while not overtly hitting anyone with them.
Yeah.
Right.
Plus, he was, you know, in that little, I'll play this. That little trope there with the nunchucks where it's him in a standoff with one of the other badly dressed bug-eyed ninjas.
Yeah.
And they're trying to one-up each other, kind of Indiana Jones, you know, style with the guy with the big, who has the bigger knife kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the other guy was really impressive. And Donna Versace over there couldn't switch hands. It was the same four moves. Like, I was like, right. No, this is backwards. That other guy's not supposed to be better than you. You're the mutant ninja turtle. And then they did that convenient cutaway where then now he's spinning the nunchucks on his finger somehow, defying all gravity and physics.
Right.
And that's part of my problem with the movie is I get taken out of these things. Like, even a venerable classic like I just watched last week for Thanksgiving, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Mm-hmm. What a wonderful, wonderful movie. The problem with that movie, there is only one problem with it. It occasionally dips its toe in magic ponds, and I don't like that. And the example I would give would be, you know, that's John Candy's hand in your butt cheeks, number one. All right, let me just go through these. Hear me out. You know that's what it is. You're not saying it's between two pillows. You know exactly what's going on, all right? So that's you're just playing with me now.
Jokes were a lot simpler then.
Yeah, they were.
Oh, that's I can't even call that a minor fault.
All right, I got a better one then.
Okay. All right.
I'm trying to think. We were talking about it while we were watching it. It may have been, I'm okay with the scene where they accidentally are going the wrong way. Not accidentally, but because John Candy's an idiot, mm-hmm. and now they're going the wrong way. And they barely make it between those two semis. And he looks over at John Candy. He looks back at him. And for one minute, John Candy's a devil with a goatee. And then the other minute, they're both skeletons. I'm totally fine with that. That is not a problem because I get the manicness of that. And it's not meant to be taken real. But when the car stops and he can't get his fingers out of the dashboard.
Oh, right.
I can't deal with magic like that. That's just magic. And I know it's a cheap joke, and I get it, and I still smile at it, and I'm not going to say this is still one of my favorite top 10 movies of all time. But it's just a little bit bothersome. You know, so when
you grab something so tightly that your nails actually puncture it. You've never been in that kind of situation, Scott
right.
Johnson.
And
you
I never will. I'll never will be happen. Because my fingers will never be able to truly penetrate a dashboard like that. Never, ever in any kind of life. So that's my only problem with that movie. It's the only thing that just gives me pause. So, and it's not just that. Like, I don't know. Like, driving in the car, whatever. I don't want to nitpick that movie. But my point is with the, so back to Ninja Turtles. Mm-hmm. You've asked me to accept a world where these turtles have mutated from small puppet turtles into big puppet men and
horrible, horrible little puppet turtles and horrible little rat.
Yeah, that horrible rat puppet. Ugh.
So horrible.
They were horrible. And you want me to believe that? Fine, I'll believe it. But now you're telling me they can all concentrate real hard and make a blue freaking rat fire out of it and have them talk to them? Stop.
I see, that didn't bother me at all.
Bothered
I'm getting
me.
First viewing of any kind with this franchise. That didn't bother me at all. It's a universe where you can make creatures living in a sewer sentient, and you can make the sewer so spacious. Give me a tropeler. No, oh my God.
I'm slow. Here we go. There you go.
I would like to ask you if any films come to mind when you think of the trope of the absurdly spacious sewer.
Yeah. I got one. Was it a sewer though in Mimic? I guess it wasn't. It was old subway stuff, wasn't it? Never mind, that doesn't count.
But these might have have been subway tunnels.
Yeah, they were big, and there was a lot to do down there. And no
do
one.
Do you remember just recently in The Dark Knight Rises that Bane was living in the sewers?
Oh,
they were huge.
Yeah, they were big. Well, they had big processing things there, right? I guess
that was a big processing machine or whaler.
But
Gothic poo, Gothic poo, dude.
How much human waste are you trying to transport?
Well, got
this Gotham.
Kind of known for that up there.
Anyway, this movie was just absurdly large sewers.
As much room as you needed. And they also did this other thing when they would be in those big spaces and it would be time to explain to April, what's her name? What's her last name? April, whatever. The reporter.
Yeah,
check.
Yeah. O'Neill.
Who would eventually, I haven't seen this new one that's out now, or they just ended that no one liked.
Oh, right. This 2014 one.
Yeah, yeah. Bay produced it and someone else, I don't know who did it. Anyway. Hello, everybody. Let me just take a minute to talk to you as I bust in here in the middle of our show to tell you about our friends at Harry's.com. I love Harry's, and so should you, because it's amazing. You want to take that nice close shave a little more serious? Well, then Harry's is great on that level alone. But if you want to spend less money, why, it's even better. Man, I love these guys. Here's all you got to do. All right. Go to Harry's.com. And you're thinking to yourself, man, I got people on my list I need to get a gift for. That guy in my life, my dad, my uncle, my brother, me, whoever. Right. Somebody who seems to have everything, or at least it seems like they do. And buying gifts can be a pain in the butt, stressful, time-consuming. You don't want to do it. Why do I want to go to the mall when I can go to Harry's.com and have them help me this time of need? Well, just in time for the holidays, Harry's has a limited edition winter Winston set for only $30. This kit comes with a sleek razor handle in your choice of charcoal gray or ice blue. As usual, it comes with three high-quality blades and their foaming shave gel or shaving cream. It's already wrapped. Shipping is always free. Did I mention that before? Always free. A few weeks ago, Harry sent me the Winter Winston set, and I love it. It's amazing. I shave my neck with it often, because sometimes I let the face grow a little bit, right? Then I'll trim that down, do a nice shave on that. But man, so good. Delivered right to my door. Love the look and the feel of the set. I also love the price. Half as much as regular razors that I get at, or used to get at the store, like Gillette Fusion and all that kind of crap. Don't do that anymore. Don't pay that kind of money. Pay half the money by heading over to Harry's.com. They'll guarantee you'll be satisfied. They've got this deal going for loyal, existing fans of the company, people who have already gone there, and for new people. As a special holiday offer, Harry's is giving away $5 every time you get that limited edition winter set. That much off. That's pretty good. Use the code FilmSackHoliday to get that. Again, that's at Harry's.com, HRRRYS.com, and get $5 off the limited edition winter Winston set with the offer code FilmSackHoliday. Big thanks to Harry's, and big thanks for you guys for helping support us as we support the show.
Oh, it's the Cartoon Network thing?
No, it's a movie. A schmovie.
I like that.
Hold on. What is that one called?
Michael Bay schmovie.
What is that one called? Hold on. Who's in Transformers? What's her name? I can't think of her name.
Megan Fox.
So Megan Fox. Here we go. That movie is called Ninja Turtles.
Oh. Okay. And that was one of the things it recommended to me after this was over.
Yeah. Oh, did it? Well,
it's streaming.
This is all CGI dudes, and this just came out 2014, this year. It's now
the
streaming.
Next mutation, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's Megan Fox, Will Arnett.
Oh, no, that's a different thing.
William Fichtner. I think he plays, no, it doesn't say. Oh, wow. Yeah, there's some interesting cast in there. Anyway, it was pretty roundly. Nobody liked it. What was my point, though? I had a point. What was my point? Where was I going? I had a thing to say about that. Ah, shit. I had a whole thing to say about what
Michael
was
Bay
gonna say. Oh, he did this thing in this movie to tell backstory, which I thought was really interesting in the one we just saw. And that is that they would not just have Splinter explain it, and it wouldn't just be a wave to flashback or fade to flashback. It was like little stage plays. Do you know what I'm trying to say? Like the way it was lit, almost kind of spotlights.
Oh, it was like there was this little intermittent film noir in the middle of the movie.
I liked it.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool. When the puppets are weird and they're freaky as crap.
Oh, they really are. I mean, like you got this shot of these little baby turtles, and it's like, someone make sure Bordetella moves back and forth.
Yeah.
But the other ones don't move. Oh, what? I mean,
yeah, weird.
It was horrible.
Right, Brian, what were you gonna say?
Well, just the fact that you know, when you told me that the Henson company was involved in this, and I didn't catch that in the credits, and I was like, oh yeah, I could totally see that with the way their faces moved in the animatronics. And then you reminded me of those horrible cutaway flashback scenes. And I was wow, the Henson Company put that out too? Like, that was them?
That was like Sesame Street level stuff too. Like, that felt pretty low rent to me. But there was something about the combination of the music they used for those that I think was the only good music in the soundtrack, and the lighting and that weird kind of stage play effect they had with those, and the weird puppetry. That worked for me. I came away from those scenes thinking they may have been my favorite things about that. It was very David Lynch weird to me. And I like that a lot.
Jim Henson died 2 months after this movie was released.
Oh, okay. I thought it was 89 for some reason.
He lived to see this movie turned down by every major studio for distribution.
Wow. Well, how involved? I mean, was he super involved with it, trying to get it, trying to push it?
It says that the main Jim Henson work was done in London, which says to me maybe he was involved. But he died of some horrible thing. Like,
it was pneumonia, I thought, wasn't it? Because he wouldn't go in. That's just how the story goes. Is his, not that he was active or practicing, but his Seventh Day Adventist back life had sort of made him like wary of doctors and just, I don't want to go in. I'm fine. Everything would be fine. And then one night it just escalated like terrible, and he just had the worst possible pneumonia.
Oh, yeah, he died of toxic shock syndrome. So he had an infection.
Yeah.
And when wasn't getting it treated.
They finally went in. It was just too late, and he couldn't save him. It's the saddest thing, dude.
And here's the crazy thing. His son, Brian, who now runs the Henson Enterprise and is, you know, a great creator in his own right.
Sure.
Is going to soon be older than his father ever was.
Oh, weird.
It's just amazing.
Because he was only ever, what was he, 40 when he died?
53.
He died. Oh, he's older than I thought. Here's the thing about Jim Henson. I'll say this. I don't know why this never come up before. Maybe it has. Whatever. You guys tell me if I've said this before. I remember growing up and hearing people say, there will never be somebody like Walt Disney.
Oh, yeah.
Whose creative vision and energy will be a thing that will last the test of time, that'll always be remembered, that will continue to generate blah, blah, blah. And while I believe that the Disney thing is a big deal, and now what's been done with that studio is, you know, even a bigger deal, but, you know, arguably you could have done that with just about anything. But anyway, the legacy is set in stone. Jim Henson's the other guy. He has to be the other guy. If you're making a list of those guys, he's one of those guys.
The reason there'll never be another whatever is the internet. Yeah. Now you don't ever have anyone working in a pocket where they basically can run the show for all of creation for all of the state of Washington.
Yep. Yep. It,
they're all interconnected, you know, like, I love the, another reality TV show I love is Face Off. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And,
I this could eat past, a peach for hours on that show. Go ahead.
Yeah. They, this What's past season.
What the,
what? Say that one part again. You get cut off, Scott.
Oh, who's I just said show? I could eat a peach for hours. I was just saying.
Oh, Face Off.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
So I thought you knew somebody who was on.
No.
A bumper.
Yeah.
So the main judges on Face Off are three great creators in their own right: V. Neil, Glenn Hetrick, and Neville Page. And in the most recent season, they had a single episode where the three of them were the contestants. They just put all the contestants aside and said, "We're going to have our judges show you how it's done." For one episode.
Huh.
And it was amazing. What they did was amazing. Like, it, I wanted that to be its own series, like, because it was out of place in a reality show.
Sure.
But my point is that people like Glenn Hetrick and Neville Page and V. Neil have the sort of ungodly talent to create anything you could imagine. You know, and I'm talking about people who made the creatures in Avatar and in Babylon 5 and so on. You know, like these really talented people. But nowadays, they're online. They're on this TV show. They're going to always be exposed, and they're never going to be able to build an empire around themselves, because they're going to move around from LA to New York to London and so forth, and do work on all these different things.
Well, and it's true of a lot of different mediums. Like, I was thinking of this the other day. If Brian Ibbett today said, "Hey, I've got an idea for a better version of some song," right? You could just put it out there and say, "Well, here's the original artist." By the end of the week, you'd have 7 or 8 mashup/covers that would rival the original or better it, or they'd come up with something original and give it to you or whatever. Like, it's just, everything is so connected now that it's no longer a thing where one guy just happens to have all the right things happen for him so that he can have the output that makes him unique to be Walt Disney or be whatever. If Walt Disney lived today, he'd be lost in a sea of animators and artists. It just would be, that's just how it would be.
Yeah. This theory doesn't work across all art. Like, Beyonce is the new Mariah Carey, is the new Madonna, et cetera. Like, it seems like there'll always be, in some kinds of art, there's always going to be people who are just dominant for a while.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But you're talking about creating an empire. And I guess now that I think about it, Beyonce kind of has created an empire, but not like nothing like Walt Disney, you know?
Yeah.
And can't. That'll never happen.
How can they? They won't. Will they? I don't know. I mean, I remember people saying they can't. I remember they said they wouldn't before Jim Henson, and Jim Henson kind of did. You know, like there's going to be somebody, somebody somewhere is going to blow everybody's minds. It might be more segmented and smaller, but it's going to be, you know, the Adventure Time guy, or it's going to be whoever. Somebody's just going to come and blow everybody's mind. He even, may even come from the internet and just, whoa, that's changed the way we think about everything or whatever.
There's just too many. There's too many people out there who can iterate on things now.
Yeah.
And keep you from ever just dominating a whole space.
Yeah.
Sorry, Scott Johnson.
No, no, it's fine. You do it. you fight against the downward, the upward, whatever, the tide, the fish.
How's it going?
Thank you. That's the one. I never saw any of the sequels. You guys haven't seen any of this stuff up till now.
No.
I feel like there are people yelling at their thing, you know, that are complete freaks about this. Like Mark Spagnuolo, for example, could not be more of a TMNT fan. He loves
really?
It.
Really?
Loves it. He'll read those comics on Comic Dorks when we do that show. He's like, just loves it. I have a feeling that this was just a huge portion of his growing up and probably has real reverence for this. So I was trying to think of the movie that I might have the most reverence for when I would have been, you know, similar age. And the problem is when I was growing up, all the things that everyone thinks are the touchstones happened. Indiana Jones, Star Wars, freaking, you know, those, all those things happened when we were kids. But if I had to pick one, probably Goonies, you know, if I had to just pull one out of the sky that people that were born 10 years before me probably think is dumb. You know, like they probably saw Goonies and went, well, that was dumb. But we loved it. Because why? Because it spoke to our childhood and whatever in some weird way. And when I talk to Mark, I swear he's tongue-kissing this movie. He loves the Turtles. He just loves them.
So I should watch out for hate mail if I were to compare this film to, say, I don't know, Howard the Duck?
Yeah, dude.
Because that's what I felt like when I was watching this, was that it was like, oh, the, you know, the over-the-top jokes, the kind of the pandering level humor, which I can't even imagine, you know, if I was 10 and watching this, finding it entertaining. Maybe, you know, maybe back then I would have been, but it really even reminded me a lot of Howard the Duck.
Even the gangs, the kind of theme gangs.
Yeah.
Like all you needed was somebody to say, do you have any toot? And we would have been right back into
it would have been exactly
Howard the Duck again. I'll never forget that toot reference ever until I die.
Quit doing the toot. I gotta stop doing toot.
Yeah.
For me, a part of it was getting into the 1990 mindset. Hmm. You know, this was the year of Dances with Wolves.
Yeah.
And I was in school. And the thing about Dances with Wolves that you might not know is that everyone between the ages of like 10 and 18 in every public school in the United States was taken to see this movie, either at the theater or was brought to your school to watch Dances with Wolves because it was so important and so relevant to history and so forth.
Sure. At least you thought it was, yeah.
It was this year that included you know, movies like Ghost and Home Alone and Pretty Woman. And so this movie, like I was just willing to give this movie a lot of slack. It looks good. It, like I say, it's really nicely paced. The music is fun. They didn't overdo the wacky stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
The little bit of, you know, Rubber Turtles and so forth, but they look fine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, they were fine. They were fine. No, it's not.
I don't think someone like Mark Spag is finding us just trashing on his favorite thing.
Yeah, I don't think we're trashing it. I just think it's
he might find that I'm doing.
Yeah, the Howard the Duck thing really puts Brian in a category.
If I'm not coming across as that I'm doing that, then I'm not doing my job. I can't tell you how much I dislike this movie.
Oh wow! All right, now we're getting to the end of the nitty gritty. I mean, I didn't hate it, but I definitely it's not like ugh. I mean. For Film Sack, it's perfect. For me as a film watcher, I would have been like, okay, well, there's got to be something else on. And you know,
this 1990, this was the year of the peak of Roseanne Barr and John Goodman on TV.
Wow.
This was where they hit their peak.
Also, The Wizard came out that year. Am I right about that?
What? The John Savage thing?
Yeah. Or the Fred Savage.
Or Fred Savage.
Yeah. With the Rob the Robot and all the Nintendo references, right, all the up
Nintendo
the butt.
Power Gloves.
Yeah. Great, dude. And they launched Mario 3 that way, didn't they? Or something? Pretty sure. Yeah. Super Mario 3 on the NES. At least, I think it was launched the same time the movie came out or something. I don't know. Still one of the best Mario games ever made.
I'm actually looking it up because I remember the Fred Savage, Beau Bridges film.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember the a Nintendo 3.
What's his beak was in it that we just saw in Hard Rain?
You know what? You're right. Super Mario Brothers 3. The whole point of the movie was to tie in with Super Mario Brothers 3.
Yeah,
you're
absolutely
right. Because
it was a road trip movie about getting to California to the big the big contest of playing Mario 3, which is so dumb in its own just by saying that, because there's no competition there except a speed run, but those weren't even a concept then.
Yep. And I just looked up the release date in North America. February 12, 1990 was when that game came out. I went to Sears in Harlingen, Texas to buy Super Mario Brothers 3.
Right on, brother. It's a hell of a game. Still good.
Oh, it really is. Seriously good. If you can get over what it looks like on your modern TV.
Yeah. As 2D Mario games go, it's always a hard call between that and Super Mario World on the SNES.
That was the first one with the raccoon tail. The flying deal.
World. Three was with the raccoon, right?
Yeah.
And then
Super Mario.
Which I think had a different name, obviously. And somebody's going to write and say, it wasn't a raccoon. It was a Bodingo or something like that.
Bodingo. Mario and his Bodingo.
It was actually a Tanuki.
Oh,
that's
Tanuki.
There we go.
Tanuki
now we
suit.
Can save the emails, people.
I really like Bodingo, though.
And I love if you look up Tanuki, you will find the phrase Japanese raccoon dog.
Nice.
What do you look
up when you say Bodingo? Urban Dictionary is the first one. Let's find out. Oh, there's a Bodingo India.
Okay.
Bodingo, a small cornerstone. I can't believe that Bodingo is open on Sundays. Corner store, sorry. Not stone.
A corner store. So somebody really just made the mistake of not knowing a bodega.
Yeah, I think so. Isn't that what that means? There's also Bodingo Kids Fashion on YouTube, Bodingo India. I already said that. There's something called the Bodingo Social Club. And Bobby Bodingo, voiced by Richard Kind, is one of the characters from the TV series Doug. So there you go.
If somebody does already have the domain parked, but bodingo.com would have been the perfect new social network.
Oh, Bodingo. Dude, friend me up on Bodingo.
Exactly. So are you on Bodingo? Yeah, I'm on Bodingo. I got my profile up there.
Yeah, that comes right out of the mouth.
Ding me on Bodingo.
Yeah, Bodingo.
You just had a great idea and it's already been stolen. That's going up online
done
as we speak.
Exactly. Before we move to clips, I want to play one trope. Dads who just don't understand comic books. I don't know how that kid puts his head in those things all day. I just don't get it. Where did he even find those things? Dude, they're comic books.
Yeah.
Hello? Go to your local comic book store, stupid parent. Mm-hmm. That irritated me to no end.
Where does he even find those headphones? Where did he get those?
Headphones? What are these kids up to today?
How are they acquiring things?
I looked at one in the bathroom. It was so dumb.
So dumb. I mean, I don't even understand. That kid, you deserve to have him be a little shoplifting turd because you suck as a dad. All right, moving on. Let's get
hold
to
on.
Clips.
I got a trope.
Oh, trope. Give me.
It just blew my mind. Do you know what ninja means? Because ninja means secret and silent and
stealthy.
Hidden.
Yeah.
And these guys are a bunch of bumbling, sword swinging, loud. They're so loud. This whole movie, I was like, why? It should have been something other than ninja if they're going to be characterized like this.
Loud,
right?
Teenage Mutant Karate Turtles.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Especially right in the wake of Karate Kid. Remember how loud all the bad guys were in Karate Kid all the time?
Yeah. We didn't even talk about how much I hate the surfer talk that they do. I hate it so much.
Can you explain to me what they were doing in New York sounding like they're from California?
Well, one of them tried to sound like Raphael tried to sound New York.
Every once in a while, one of them would actually do that. They'd be like, hey, I'm trying to eat some pizza here.
Pizza over here. But then the rest of the time, it's like, bodacious, dude. Yeah, man. Right. Just like, come on, stop.
I don't understand why the movie wasn't set in L.A.
Also, where would they pick up all that from? Because the rat didn't do it. The
rat
sitting
around. Huge sewers where there's plenty of surfer girls coming and going,
I guess. It'd have to be. Yeah. The movies they watched or something? I don't know.
By the way, can I, one quick casting note?
Yeah.
The voice of Michelangelo, Robbie Rist.
Yeah.
cousin Oliver from the Brady Bunch and a guy we recently saw in Sharknado.
Oh, you're kidding. What is he doing?
Oh, yeah.
He was, what's
well,
he
guess,
doing?
I guess we know what he's doing. He's doing Sharknado movies. But
exactly.
He was just the voice of which?
He was the voice of Michelangelo.
Oh, all right. He barely said anything.
Hold on,
which means that he must have made some sort of cameo, because didn't all four of the voice actors make cameos somewhere in the film?
In the new one?
Oh, right. No, I read that they all had
bit
parts without the...
Right.
Yeah, that's
like
true.
The guy, the Raphael, was the passenger in the back of the taxi that Raphael runs across or falls across.
Yeah, and then they were all, one of them was a gang dude in the gang scene. Yeah, they're all all over the place.
Nope. I just looked at this. So apparently it was really just the physical actors all made cameo roles. The voice actors didn't.
Oh, well, there you have it. So he didn't do anything but talk. By the way, see whose voice is this or whose voice is that on the documentary on Netflix? Really interesting. It's all about voice actors.
Oh yeah. I keep coming over that one. I sat and watched the Johnny Carson documentary.
I loved that one. Was it the same one I saw where they really chronicle his...
It's Kevin Spacey narrates it.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
It was so good. Watch that on Netflix.
What's that
people.
Called?
We'll have to watch that.
King of Late Night or something.
No.
Was it King of... damn it. Whatever. It's fantastic. I don't remember the name. It's really good, though.
It is. It's called Johnny Carson, King of Late Night.
That's it. That is so good. Oh, my gosh. Even if you don't like late night TV. Like, I have a very specific story with that movie, because I remember as a kid thinking Johnny Carson was dry and dumb. I didn't like any of it. That was my parents' show, right? Like, when Letterman came along, I was like, now that's my business. That's what I'm up to. So I was up at midnight every night watching Letterman, thinking only old lamers listen to anything Carson would say. And so I just didn't have the respect for it. That I think is probably due, or at least the respect the era is due or whatever. So watching that documentary just woke me up to just all of it. It was great. It's really good. And even if it doesn't even pull any punches, like Carson had some dick moves. Like there were some moments in his career where he is a douche.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. The movie book, it was not fawning.
Mm-mm.
Like, I mean, it certainly was honest.
Sure.
But man, Johnny Carson's mom was mean to him, and he just slept around on every woman he ever married to the point that the last, he died basically separated from his wife, but they wouldn't get divorced because he didn't want to be divorced four times or something.
Yeah,
because
it would have been, he's got this weird Midwest upbringing mixed with like Hollywood and power and money, and it's a great documentary. I loved it.
Yeah, there's a whole sequence where Ed McMahon basically comes clean on being Johnny's friend and how he couldn't ever really be Johnny's friend.
Yeah.
And you feel so sorry for Ed McMahon.
Yeah. Yeah. That was an odd thing. Totally worth seeing. Brian, watch it. It's good.
I will. Yeah, for sure.
My next documentary.
The voice actor one, was that called I Know That Voice?
Oh, I Know That Voice. That's it.
Yes.
Okay.
It's got a big mouth and like a dangly thing in the middle.
A uvula.
Yeah. Someone's
There are some tremendous documentaries on Netflix streaming right now.
Yeah, I agree. Some good stuff.
If like seriously, the Gore Vidal one, The United States of Amnesia, is streaming. You should watch that.
Yeah.
This won't mean anything to you guys, but there's one about the Hawaiian surfing legend Eddie Aikau.
Mm.
And it's called The Legend of Eddie Aikau. And
write themselves, don't they?
Yes, they really do. But like, it's just weird how it go to the documentary section of Netflix right now. It's awesome.
All right. I'm in. You've convinced me. All right. Here's some clips from the movie. We've got a few here. And let's start with this one, which, again, I don't think sounds like professional news gathering to me. But here it is.
Instead of getting better, things have actually gotten worse.
Now, hold on. Let me get that straight. Instead of things getting better, they've gotten worse.
Actually. No, they've actually.
Actually,
they've actually
gotten worse. I hated that whole thing. And
ways things could go if they're not going to be going better.
Exactly. Yeah. There was even a headline in one of the papers when they showed a paper up close that said, city crime is on the rise. What does that mean? You can't be general like that. Nobody does
city
that.
Crime.
City crime is on the rise.
City crime.
So stupid. All right. Here's... this kind of stuff just kills me. It's because they got like a pizza or something. It's so dumb. It's bad. Come on, Randy. It's bad.
It's horrible.
All right.
I folded my arms at that point, and I don't think I unfolded them until the movie was over.
Okay, but though you just took it what I said a lot farther than I intended. It's horrible to sit here and listen to it.
Yeah.
But watching and listening wasn't as bad.
Well, okay.
Serious.
I'm not going to.
All right.
Well, here's the rat talking. So I know you enjoyed that.
Oh, yes. Again, why couldn't they get any Asian actor in the world?
Anybody would have been fine. You're right. James Hong would have been fine. Whoever you can get. Here's that bit.
In this, you must never lapse. Even those who would be our allies would not understand.
Stop.
Our domain is the shadow. Stray from it reluctantly. For when you do, you must strike hard and fade away.
It's really bad.
Oh, that's horrendous.
That's really bad.
I didn't even see. You're comparing the watching versus listening.
Mm-hmm.
That did make it infinitely worse to listen to.
Yeah, it's really bad.
You're right on the money.
Well, because at least in the movie, you'd see this furry face talking. And this one, you're like, what the hell are they thinking?
At the end, well, you probably captured it. I'm not going to say it.
All right.
I'll wait and see. If not,
bring it up because
I will.
Whatever
I will.
It is. All right, this is the level of comedy on display in the movie.
God, I hate punkers, especially bald ones with green makeup.
Yeah, punkers. Freaking punkers.
At least they put the plucking violin in the background so you know it's comedy.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't sure because last time I saw that guy, he was scrawling something on his desk in detention.
This is what my girlfriend would look like without any skin.
That's a great line.
It really is.
I really liked him in that. He was in the remake of that Swedish Let the Right One In movie. The American one, Let Me In, I think they called it.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Really good. And he's great in it.
Yeah, he elevated this for me. Mm-hmm. I actually enjoyed seeing him appear in the movie. It was the only bright spot of this film.
Only bright spot. Oh my God.
Well,
I like that you chugged it down though. You did it for the team. I'm impressed with that.
This might be one of the hardest movies I had to watch for films. I can't say that because certainly we've watched some real garbage, but
right.
And you've got a teenage son. This never came up upper.
You got a teenage mutant son.
Grew up in that eye of the hurricane that was physically untouched by Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Mm-hmm. Right. It was like that, you know, born in 1997. You guys will have to keep it down a little bit. They're both playing WoW back there. Yeah. But yeah, grew up in 1997. So that whole formative years where he would have been interested in that sort of thing, there really wasn't much of it. I guess it was a 2007 Cartoon Network thing, but by then he'd already moved on to other things.
Yeah.
It's other interests.
Missed him entirely.
Yeah.
All right.
So what did hit him? Like what do you remember Tristan being really attached to any like entertainment properties when he was like 11 or 12?
11 or 12. Jurassic Park. I mean, he was really into dinosaurs for a long, long time. Yeah. So even a little bit like The Land Before Time, more Jurassic Park, Walking with Dinosaurs, stuff like that. I'm trying to think of a franchise like a...
there's a whole like turning 20, somewhere between 15 and 20 generation whose memories like this, unlike the ones you're all mentioning, are things like FIFA 2004.
Okay. All right.
You know what I mean?
It's all right.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's just a very different thing than it used to be. Because again, it's these smaller chunked out entertainment things they latch onto because that's just the world they live in. I mean, for them, their big memory is the first time they got a like on Facebook or something. It's just weird.
Yeah, but I'm sure there are still plenty of franchises for preteens.
Hmm.
You know,
Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh, those kind of good things. Good one.
Those keep coming back too. They don't tend to go away, especially Pokemon. I mean, I don't know that it's ever been bigger. It's huge now.
And it's horrible. The storytelling in Pokemon is horrible.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
So as a result, we get things like Slugterra, which is great storytelling, obvious ripoff.
Yeah. Slugterra, everybody.
Slugterra is a real thing? Yeah. Or are you making up another turtle name?
No. Slugterra is a Disney-fied, and Disney's involved, Pokemon, North American-style Pokemon.
Yeah.
And the creatures are slugs.
Really?
Yeah, wow, I've heard something about that. I have not seen it in action, but I have heard of that. All right, here's, I don't know what this is.
Hey, look, just take it easy, okay?
Oh, Dad, it was Dad. Take it easy.
Hey, look.
Listen.
Just take it easy, okay?
Okay, got it. Gosh, that guy. All right. Deny the Foot.
Are you denying that such an organization known as the Foot exists?
The Foot. Really?
Such an organization known as the Foot?
The Foot.
You know, we've seen her in other things. She was in Armageddon.
Yep. Well, we still haven't seen that movie, but yeah.
And her resume, I mean, if you look at her resume, it is pages and pages of appearances on TV shows, like one-off appearances. Huge, huge resume for her.
Like CSI and like Law and Order and all that kind
yeah,
of stuff.
Yeah, all that stuff. Yeah. And I didn't recognize her from anything. You know, yeah. When she, especially when she appeared on screen the first time, and it's that horrible lighting from the newscast where it makes her look like she's 40, 45, 50.
Does not look 20. She'd have been like 22 here.
Right. Exactly. And there were points in this film that I'm like, I can't believe she's younger than me.
Yeah. She needed a bra later in the movie, but I guess if you're 12, you're pretty okay with it. I was going to say this about her. She was in Armageddon, which we haven't seen on FilmSack yet, but we want to so desperately.
Every week we're going to bring it up.
We're going to bring it up. She was, I think she was Bruce Willis's wife in that, or ex-wife, or
right. No, it wasn't Bruce Willis. It was
Was the other guy,
the redhead,
the bad guy in The Postman,
Will Patton.
Right, the one whose kid.
Yeah. Yeah, he goes to give a thing to his kid, and his wife is telling him he can't be there.
Yeah, he's the copier salesman turned Darth Vader in The Postman. That guy's great.
Oh, God. Can we please see that for FilmSack?
We need to. It's the only way I'll ever watch it again is for FilmSack. So.
Really? Oh, yeah. Well, then, and you really don't like FilmSack movies being longer than about 99 minutes.
When I can help it.
And this one, man, The Postman is like.
No, The Postman isn't all there. Long. Yeah, it's like waiting for a Wii 2006. It's rough. You'll be there all night. All right, here's something about busting chops.
Just what is it you hope to accomplish out there besides busting my chops?
Thank you, reacting guy. I like that. Here is the creepy pizza. Creepy baby turtles talking about pizza for no reason except that they do. So
pizza, pizza.
Dude.
They just got sentient, and the first thing they said was pizza.
I could feel Brian just falling mentally apart hearing this.
My
stuff
arms again. Are refolding.
Here is the big. So there was a Star Wars reference. It was ridiculous and dumb, and I can't believe they said it. But here it is.
I am your father.
Great, thanks, Shredder. That's great, dude. That's his dumbest ripoff ever. All right, here's something about the Foot. Oh, this is the incredulous other reporter who just can't believe she just heard her say this. Here you go.
I'm sorry, the Foot.
I'm sorry, the Foot.
I'm sorry,
the Foot.
Hold on,
you said the Foot. Okay, get her off the stage. Let's get sports in here. All right, moonlighting reference. I don't know if you noticed this one. A little moonlighting.
Yeah. Gosh, it's kind of like moonlighting, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's kind of like moonlighting because they were arguing or something.
Right.
It's dumb. All right, here's your claustrophobic comment.
You're a claustrophobic.
I didn't keep the part where he replied, but yeah, that laugh at the end. All right, we like some good grunting on the show, not just from us as hosts, but from the movies themselves. And so here's an example of that. I don't remember the point of that.
That was the bald guy, the bald henchman, second in command under Shredder, and Elias Koteas about to throw down in again one of the greatest battles where Elias doesn't do anything except hurl himself backward into cardboard boxes three times.
Yeah, what's the point of that?
And I can't even remember. I guess it was just you need a little Primatene mist that'll clear that right up.
Yeah, Primatene. I haven't heard that in so long.
I know.
That's really
product,
weird.
Some great product placement, if that's the case.
I feel really old, and suddenly I want to go scrub with Irish Spring and put some 2000 flushes in my toilet.
Ooh, and remember Lever 2000? Remember that stuff?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That looked like great soap because people were putting it in their pits and their faces and their
everything.
There's
always good-looking people using that soap.
Yeah, right?
So I actually think you should give your kids something weird and old as they're growing up.
Soap.
And it needs to smell, it needs to have a unique smell. So like I grew up, my dad only ever bathed with Ivory soap and Johnson's baby shampoo. Mm. So as a result, I mean, my dad his entire life only used those two cleaning products. So as a kid, I often used Ivory soap and Johnson's baby shampoo.
That was in the tub, and sure.
Nowadays, every 5 years or so, I go get some at the store, and I just have these incredible memories as I'm smelling them in my bathroom of being a kid.
Yeah. Smell's supposed to be one of the, if not the greatest bringer backer of like memories and things, right?
Right. So right now out there, I'm telling you, go get some Axe and use it on your 6-year-old. And then one day.
Let them grow up with Axe.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, it was my grandfather's mouthwash. It was Cepacol.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Welcome to Cepacol's Theater Presents.
It's a horrible name, really, now that I think about it.
CP colon, exactly. Make the short out of that. My dad used this stuff because he was always greasy and grimy and working on cars and stuff. And he would come home and he would open a can. It was almost like a small, almost like chewing tobacco can that had this orangish, yellowish stuff in it. And he'd pull out a smear of it and wash his hand with it. And I cannot for the life of me remember the name of it, but it would take... It was like a degreaser. It was like a hard grease removal thing. The smell of that instantly takes me back to like 85, just in a flash without even thinking about it. All I have to do is get a whiff of it. And
Was it Lava?
No, it was some other brand.
Was it Gojo?
No.
Those were the two in everybody's garage shop. It was either Lava.
If you had a degreaser.
Bodingo.
Bodingo degreaser.
Was it degreaser is what you call it?
Lava, man.
Yeah, Lava was
sure.
I'm gonna look real quick.
Hummus.
No,
that's really the more generic name for it.
No, I'm telling you, it was one other kind.
Wow.
And it kind of had a citrusy smell.
Oh, Gojo! Wow, I haven't gotten my hands on some of that stuff in so long.
Ajax.
This is gonna bug the hell out of me. It had a name that it may not even exist anymore. I don't know, but it wasn't either of those. It was like Steel Man or freaking, it was some manly name. Like, definitely wasn't Gojo, that I know for sure, and I'm pretty sure it wasn't the other one that you said.
Lava.
Yeah, I don't think it was Lava.
There was something orange, like,
well, Gojo was green, wasn't it?
No, was it?
Gojo was orange, but there was something with orange in the name, like Awesome Orange or,
oh, here we go, hold on.
Oh, there was something on
Mean Green.
I may have found
Citrusolve?
It no. Oh, I just know it's going to pop. I'm doing an image search now because they have to have this in here.
Crud Cutter?
Crud Cutter is a great name, but that's not it.
That is a really good name, Crud Cutter.
Oh, there it is. Goop.
Goop. All right, sure.
Groomer's Goop is what they sometimes refer to it as, but it was like a hand that made the G.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the stuff. Goop. Yep.
Orange Goop, man.
My dad would use Goop, and it worked, and we all had to use it when we'd help him work on cars and stuff. Anyway, I just smell that now, just thinking about it.
Oh, me too. Yeah. It's that kind of thing. You got to give that. It's a gift you give to your children.
Yeah, it's really weird.
And they had orange goop.
Yeah, there it is. That's the stuff I'm looking
My
at
kid
right
is going to associate me with Plumeria soap, I think, which I'm fine with that.
Plumeria? Is that like a pump out of the pump?
It's a flower.
Oh, all right. I don't know.
No, I mean, but does the Plumeria soap come out of a pump?
Yeah, or are you just rubbing flowers on your hands at night?
No. I get this. Okay, so there's this place in Hawaii called Bubble Shack.
Yeah.
And they make a bunch of different Hawaiian smelling soaps.
All right.
And one of them is just straight up Plumeria, and it's delicious.
It sounds great. Bubble Shack sounds like a good bubble tea place to me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I would have thought that would be the name. But anyway, here you go. Here's something about facing Shredder.
You fight well in the old style, but you've caused me enough trouble. Now you face the Shredder.
The Shredder?
That guy thinks pretty highly of himself.
They seem to go back and forth between calling him Shredder and the Shredder.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They couldn't decide if he was just something who shreds.
Even.
Go get the Shredder.
Yeah,
do with this cheese block? Oh, get the Shredder.
Are you a are you a thing, or are you a thing that does a thing? Get yourself
I'm a person,
straight.
And my name is Shredder.
That's right. Pizza. All right.
So, I forgot a trope.
Oh, but hold on.
You just reminded me. This is I wanted to talk about this. This is an actual trope with a famous name. It's called the Fagin.
Okay.
And it's named after a Oliver Twist character. And the Fagin is a crook who takes in children and then has them steal for him or act as his army of henchmen.
Hold on. Would he be the guy that Oliver asked for more soup from and wouldn't get it? Is that Fagin?
No, that's the... More gruel. That was the
right.
Was the owner of the orphanage.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
Nonetheless, the Fagin, the Fagin is the most famous trope I've ever heard of. That I can only think of one other example. So I was really excited to see this in this movie.
All right.
And I guess Guardians of the Galaxy kind of has it, but the example that I came across was Slumdog Millionaire.
Okay.
Slumdog Millionaire, you know, the truly bad guy in the movie takes in children and has them sing for money on the streets. And this movie has the Fagin, this fabled trope.
Yeah, he's the Pied Piper type dude, I guess.
Would you say that the Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, because he had all the kids doing the mining for him?
Totally.
Wow!
In fact, there's light and dark Fagin in that movie because you got the one guy going bring back the stone, bring back to us, and he's got a bunch of kids around too. And then,
they're not all working for him.
No. It's like they're the happy version of the same deal. They're like the flip of the coin. There,
it's important to mention this about the Shredder because it solves that question: where are their parents? They don't have them.
Right?
They're missing parents. No, is the problem?
They follow this man. He is now parent number one. Mm-hmm. All right. Here's the longest. I want to just make a note. In Film Sack history, we have never had somebody fall this long from a high place and yell this long. And here it is. 7 seconds, longest drop yell we've had. How many floors was that building? Really? Yeah,
that was a looped sound.
And you never seem to get any further away.
Nope, I'm going to make a fart sound at the end of that and use it all the time because that's pretty good. what's this? So I was watching Star Trek and I fell asleep during TNG and these words were spoken and it woke me up.
We felt honor.
I thought Brian did appreciate that.
Yes, I thought of the same thing. Like, oh, you got a Klingon here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, well, not really. This is a bad transition. Sam Rockwell, we've already talked about, he's in the movie, but I haven't played any audio of him in the movie, so I'm going to play some now. This is him toward the end of the film, and it's him talking. So here you go.
Check out the East Warehouse over Lebanon Island. Get your answers there.
It's very Brooklyn.
Very New York. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, go yeah, check
you get
it
your
out
answers
there.
Yeah.
But he wasn't one of the turtles. He was just a guy.
He was just a man. Here's the rap at the end of the movie, which is terrible. Here you go.
This is serious, so give me a quarter. I was a witness, get me a reporter. Call April O'Neil in on this case. Hey, you better hurry up, there's no time to waste.
I love raps at the end of movies that describe the film.
Oh, yeah.
It totally is.
Love it.
And that rapper sounded even more bored than I was.
Yeah. He sounded like, what's his name?
There's a bunch of turtles, and they're walking around, and you ought to watch out because there's stuff on the ground.
That's right. Mm-hmm. There's a rat pizza. And a girl and some pizza, too. If you
don't know what else happened because I went up and got a sandwich. And
and apparently they did this at the end of every movie.
Yeah.
Including the most recent one.
Yep, they did. And it was a variation of this song.
Really?
Yeah. And it was much more gangster.
The second one had Vanilla Ice doing it, right?
Did he? Maybe. That seems
he was involved with that, right? Wasn't he involved in the second film?
That seems appropriate to me. What you're saying rings true, but I never saw it.
This was Partners in Crime.
Oh, Ninja Rap. Here you go. Here, I found it. Vanilla Ice Ninja Rap.
Go Ninja, go Ninja, go. Go Ninja, go Ninja, go. Go Ninja, go Ninja, go. Go, 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 go.
All right. Yeah, I remember this now. Wow. Have you seen? You need to see that. I didn't realize. I'd forgotten that he just looked like a waiter. His Vanilla Ice's getup was like a waiter at a fancy mm-hmm. party. It was never very rappy.
Yeah, he was working for the caterer. What?
This is really bad in this movie.
In the film he was?
No, his getup in all of his stuff. Well, he always looked like he was working for the caterer.
I agree. Here he is rapping.
The power of the Ninja Turtle face. Iceman. You know I'm not playing. Devastate the show what the turtles are saying.
Okay, that's real bad. That's really bad.
I need you to come back to this song at the end of the movie we're sacking.
This one that I played?
Okay.
Where is it? Here it is.
This is serious, so give me a quarter.
Okay, so that was by a duo called Partners in Crime. You've never heard of them otherwise.
Nope.
They released this song as a single, right?
Yeah.
It did nothing in anywhere in the world, except for whatever reason on the UK charts, it hit number one.
What?
No way.
What's going on
for
over
one
there?
For 1 week in 1990, this was the number one song in Great Britain.
Why? What for, I would ask. That's terrible.
Wow.
What is wrong with the
it.
Europeans? I have friends over there. We got to ask that question.
The Brits, man.
That's terrible.
All the other Europeans have their own charts. They didn't do this.
I guess that's true. Maybe they made some kind of deal.
What kind of a deal?
I don't know.
So the clip I was looking for was Splinter at the end saying his whole cowabunga thing. And then he says, oh, I made a funny.
Yeah. I made it. Oh, yeah. I didn't capture that crap. I should have. That was right at the end. And I think I was glad it was over.
By the way, I'm going to really show my unfamiliarity with the franchise here, but I could have done without the good guy being named Splinter and the bad guy being named Shredder. That's too similar.
It was a little,
No, I've always had that. That's very funny you say that, because to this day, that is the big confusion. I think you've touched on a thing everybody who is familiar with the franchises knows already, that they are way too close to each other and you mix them up all the time.
Oh, well, one needs to be named Splinter and the other one needs to be named Megatron.
Megatron.
Exactly.
And then you can tell the difference.
I love
it. You shred something, you could end up with splinters.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you splint something, you're healing, and that makes no sense. So here's one more thing. What was it? Oh, this is hearing that there was a sequel, and Brian Ebbett yelled,
"Help! Help! It's happening!"
All right. Fold those arms again.
Yeah, 2016. They're saying Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2.
Great. I guess that Megan. Whoops. Stop. The Fox one made enough movie. The Megan Fox one made enough money. Not movie. Made enough money.
It certainly made enough movie.
So much movie.
It did okay. So I think, makes sense financially. I will probably see it just because I think those turtles actually do kind of look cool, those new ones.
Well, I mean, and let's face it, Scott. The Scott Johnson saying I will probably see it is a really low bar.
Yeah, it is. It's aim low, I always say. I also say
That's your turn.
Why, looky there, it's the Film Sack Checklist, which begins with the first of the list, which is 90s era kid arcade skateboard thingy hangout. Check. All right, it's in there.
Yeah. Yeah, and it had neon for no reason.
Yeah,
right.
Except for all the kids.
Somebody had to install that. Somebody said, "Oh, I'm gonna put neon in here so that my teenage mutant turtles."
Again, if you're under the age of like 40, you have no freaking idea how expensive neon lights were.
No, it's very expensive.
It was insane.
Still is expensive. It's
not
cheap.
But you can now go to the mall and walk into Spencer's and buy a neon light and bring it back to your bedroom. Back in the day, you had to like go to a closing the store sale, or you had to know someone who worked at a beer distributor or something, and you had to spend hundreds of dollars to get a single neon sign.
This is true. I still want an on-air sign that I can actually put outside the door and put on when I'm on the air.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do that. I haven't done it. Maybe I'll LED that thing up, I mean, needs neon now?
Mine isn't neon, but it's an on-air sign.
Is it LED? Is that what you're using there?
No, it's a light behind a panel.
No.
It's a box with a light inside, kind of like an old radio station one.
Oh, and remember neon signs used to come with these big blocky transformers that made this loud buzzing sound when you turned them on?
Yeah, it was a bad time. It was a bad technology. It's a bad time. The second on the list, a good golf club always saves the day. Check. And finally, death of the bad guy by falling off a building. Check.
Forever.
Nice job, guys. Truck stuff. We have a few connections. It says here Whoopi Goldberg's in this.
No.
That's what Daryl says.
No.
Played Bernadette Thompson.
She's in the new one.
Oh. You know what he did?
I wonder if he looked at the new one.
He did. He totally did. Daryl, you dingleberry. We were talking about the original like we'd watch that new thing. It's not even on stream. Is it streaming? Maybe it is. Maybe that's why. All right. Daryl screwed up. Whoopi Goldberg is not in this movie.
Yeah, I'm going to return to it. I'm going to find you a connection.
All right, find me a connection. Soundtrack. Well, I already can think of one.
I was going to say Judith Hogue has to have been in something Star
Trek. Yeah, totally, dude. Give her a weird nose ridge. Totally. If she's not in Star Trek, I'll eat my hat. No, are you kidding?
For her.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Elias Koteas, maybe?
I'll bet you one of the voice guys.
Nope.
I'll find one. There's got to be.
Yep, found it.
Who?
The Brian Tochi, who was the voice of Picasso.
Bar Raphael, got it.
I don't know why I'm thinking I'm going to correct you. I don't know why.
In the Next Generation episode Night Terrors, he played Ensign Kenny Lynn.
Oh, all right. That's the one where Riker keeps having bad dreams, isn't it? No. It's the one where Troy keeps having the dreams because she got violated by an alien at night or whatever.
You're mixing up so many episodes, and it's great. I love it.
He was also in the original series as one of the children in the episode, And the Children Shall Lead.
Oh, that's awesome. So those are big Trek connections.
Yeah, yes. He's a great connection.
Oh, my gosh. All right.
We saw him in the Omega Man.
You know, the one that came to mind was Sam Rockwell, but I know it's Galaxy Quest, but it's so Trekky that you just keep...
He was a red shirt in the movie that pretty much was a, you know...
Red shirt movie.
Bad guy here, James Saito, was also in Star Trek Voyager. He was in the episode The 37.
No, that guy's great. He's in lots of things. I like him. He's a handsome man, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, good-looking Asian man.
And why couldn't they get someone to voice the... I'll stop.
Yeah, so you can stop, man. Soundtrack, great. I'd give it a NP for 90s poop. I did like some of the ninja music moments. I thought some of that stuff that where they got a little bit more authentic were good. But most of it was just dumb. Well, let's sum this thing up in a Twitter post. It's where you guys, in 140 characters or less, you sum it up, and let's start with Randy.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Sure. A rat from Japan who suddenly has four sentient turtles in his tutelage gives them Italian names. Because why not?
Tutelage. Turtle tutelage. I like it. That's pretty good. Also, then, Brian Ibbett.
The Secret Life of the American Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It's basically Encino Man with rubber suits and nunchucks, except that I liked Encino Man.
Encino Man is great. It's an American classic. Love that movie.
I'm sorry, Brian Ibbett. You're really going to rate any Pauly Shore movie above this?
Yes. I would too. I'd take Biodome over this.
I wouldn't rate every Pauly Shore movie above this. But I will say Encino Man is far better than
I would take Encino Man and Biodome over
And I
this.
Would put Biodome, as painful as it is to watch Stephen Baldwin in Biodome right after The Usual Suspects.
Sure.
I mean, he was still spending some Usual Suspects money when he did Biodome.
It's too far.
Yep.
And I just want everybody out there who knows that I'm right to know I've got your back. This is not as bad as Brian Ibbett says it is.
Encino Man is a hell of a movie. This is all I'm agreeing with. All right. We have with us now, this just handed to me, the alternate titles for today's film, Creepy Elmo Rat Puppet, or Who Put All This Shredder in the Landfill? That's all I could think about when they killed him and put him in the
Oh, right, in the trash.
Yeah, they'll never find his body, fellas. It's fine. Just throw
Creepy
it away.
Creepy Elmo Rat Puppet is the greatest name you've ever come up with. Period.
Emails. We got some emails. One from Matt Wobbles, a.k.a. Big Wobbles. It's his rapper name, I guess.
I go by Matt, but they call me Big Wobbles.
My dearest Sackers, since the new Star Wars trailer just came out, I've been binging on anything Star Wars. This brought me to the 1985 Ewok Battle for Endor on YouTube, or Ewoks Battle for Endor on YouTube. Mm-hmm. I think this is perfect for the show. Ewoks plus Wilford Brimley plus the principal from the Breakfast Club equals film sack gold. Thank you for your consideration, Matt.
John Vernon is in there?
Yes, wow. John Vernon is in it. And
you just never know where he's going to pop up.
Somebody had sent me a DVD version of this that was terrible quality. And then they sent a VHS version that was good quality, but I didn't have a way to capture it very well off the VHS. If this is on YouTube, I think we owe it to our listeners this Christmas, this holiday season, to put that in there.
I'm adding it to our all-time watch list. What's the name of the movie again?
It's called Ewoks, Battle for Endor.
Ewoks,
It was on
Battle for Endor.
It was on TV when we were kids. All the major characters from the movies make an appearance. It's garbage.
Like a miniseries, or was it just 1 2-hour made-for-TV movie? I think it was multiple nights.
I thought it was 1 2-hour. Now, I don't want to get this confused with a Christmas special, which is different. Battle for Endor is not the same as the Star Wars Christmas special, which is all about Chewbacca's family during Christmas or during Big Tree Day or whatever the hell they called it. I don't remember, but what?
I dropped my headphones. Life Day.
Oh, Life Day. Was that it? Life
that
Day.
That was hysterical. Because it sounded like you were returning to whoever was making noise earlier and screaming Life Day at them.
Yeah. You sounded like Uncle Leo. I thought I paid for it.
Howard, it was Life Day.
That's amazing.
I would like to point out that if I can't stop wanting for us to sack Star Wars, The Clone Wars.
Yeah. I'm all right with that.
So bad.
I'm all right with that. Any of the prequels, I'd be fine sacking.
No, but The Clone Wars.
Specifically?
You're talking about the movie that came out before the TV show that was good.
No. Right. You mean this? Oh, yeah.
This was really bad.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. I don't think I hated as much as the first one, though. I hated Phantom Menace with a fiery, burning sun. Hated it.
Yeah. Okay.
Final email. Hi, guys.
Unfortunately, Phantom Menace is another movie too long for Scott Johnson to sack.
It is too long. hey, guys, has Ben Welsh, assistant clubhouse manager at the Robert Trent Jones Golf Club.
Nice.
He put that all in his email. hey, guys, my brother Jason and I are huge fans of the show. Top three episodes have been Modern Conan, The Barbarian, Footloose, and my all-time favorite, due to Scott losing his shit over the meaning of water, Minority Report. I would like to recommend Suicide Kings with Christopher Walken. Plenty of great Walken references. Horrible yet entertaining. Whodunit. Appreciate the time spent and thanks for sacking Ben. Thank you, Ben. And I don't see a reason why not. I don't know if it's streaming or what, but
actually, that's kind of a guilty pleasure movie for me. I actually kind of like it, and it had a bunch of
never seen it
young actors in it, and I want to say even Stephen Baldwin for some reason I think was in that.
Well, that guy just keeps coming up. Everything's coming up Baldwin today.
Everything's coming up Stephen Baldwin.
Yeah, is it? I mean, how old is that?
Jay Moore was in it. I want to say
90s,
mid 90s. Okay. Yeah.
I never saw it. I'd see it.
And Brian, would you say it's better than a Pauly Shore movie?
I'd say it's far better than a Pauly Shore movie.
It's the PS rating. Seriously? That's your new rating, the PS rating.
I would actually rate it. I would say that Suicide Kings is probably I would go out on a limb and say that of the four of us, maybe everybody but Dunaway would like it. Can't even come up with why, and I can't even come up with why Brian Dunaway wouldn't like it. I think actually he might like it as well. I just don't want to go out on a limb and say all four of us will like it.
I want to see it. Yeah, 3 out of 4 is a good bet though.
Mm-hmm.
You can win that. You've been to Vegas. You know what's up.
I know the odds.
Yeah.
Never tell me the odds.
Yeah, the house is going to win, but you know.
I am odd about Dennis Leary. I love and hate Dennis Leary.
Yeah, I have a kind of a love-hate too.
It's like there's
moments.
You liked him in The Ref, right?
Yeah, The Ref is great. But, like when he bites the head off the little manger baby and goes, Jesus, that's the funniest thing I ever heard.
Yeah.
Made a face like it was all gross and old. And he yelled, Jesus.
This came out right.
So funny.
Scott just sold it.
Around the same time as The Ref. And I would say it's on par with The Ref.
I love The Ref.
Sean Patrick Flannery. So speaking of your Indiana Jones.
Oh, yeah.
Henry Thomas. Mm-hmm. So Elliot.
Yeah, Elliot.
Jay Moore. Jeremy Sisto. Brad Garrett.
Oh, Brad Garrett. Hey,
where's my brother?
Exactly.
Right? Oh, okay.
But I guess no Stephen Baldwin, but a lot of people who are kind of Stephen Baldwin-esque.
Yeah. I love those people.
Are we done with emails?
Yeah, we're done with emails.
We're
let's talk about Body Snatchers next. Because that's next
week. Oh, gosh, yes. Ooh, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, my friend.
The 1978 version.
Correct.
The right version. The one where Donald Sutherland finds a rat turd in the soup. It's my only memory of it.
Yeah, understand there was a 1956 version, and then there's been a number of sort of remakes and reboots and reattempts ever since these two.
Yeah.
There was one called Body Snatchers in 1993, but forget that.
Yeah.
We're talking about Philip Kaufman. Yes, that guy. Philip Kaufman's 1978 Invasion of the Body Snatchers, starring Donald Sutherland.
I call him Philip Seymour Kaufman sometimes.
Nope, that's not the same guy.
All right.
Same guy. This is the one who directed all of the Indiana Jones films and The Right Stuff.
Yeah. Ooh, I love The Right Stuff.
Yep.
Oh my gosh, what a great movie, although Cynthia's hell.
I'm excited to see this.
I'm just warning you, get your expectations lowered, my friends.
Well, I'm sure it's not amazing or doesn't hold up and all that, but I am dying to find out if it's like Waterworld where I remember the scene right or not, if he really finds a rat turd in that soup or not.
It's going to be interesting, yeah.
The only thing I remember is the little dog with the human face.
Woof! Oh, that too. kind of have a memory of that. I also think, for no reason good at all, that Leonard Nimoy is in this.
He is in it. Yep.
Oh, yep. He is?
Goldblum.
No yep. way. All right.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
Wait, Goldblum is in this?
Jeff Goldblum's in this. Brooke Adams is in this. 1978. Kevin McCarthy.
How old was Goldblum?
Probably 20.
Oh, gosh. Well, let's answer that question next week.
That's, yeah. Okay. Hey, okay. Beyond Pins and Needles, everybody. Next week, we reveal for the first time ever the age of one Jeff Goldblum.
Yep.
And
keep an eye out for Robert Duvall in a tiny, tiny part.
Oh, good. He's the turd in the rat in the soup. The rat turd.
He's the dog face.
That's it. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We missed you, Brian Dunaway. We'll see you next time. And we'll see all of you next time for Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Find it on Netflix. Watch it now. We are at filmsack.com. Email us, filmsack@gmail.com. We love reading your emails. Please keep those coming. On Twitter, we are at filmsack. Leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever podcasts are distributed. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, for the missing Brian, and for Randy. We'll see you next time.
We will see you next time.
Next time.
Cowabunga, dudes.
No. I can't find the thing. Where the hell did it go? Hold on a sec. Ah, damn it. My theme's gone. Here you go.
Oh, okay.
How about
nope,
a booby?
Nope. That wasn't it.
Please keep all this.
I'm putting it in later. I can't find it.
Just what keep
I,
all this.
What have I done? It's always there. It's not there. At the end of the show, I'd like to tell you what is also always there. Our love for making Film Sack. Are you looking for ways to help us keep making it? Then look no further than patreon.com/frogpants. Help all the Frog Pants shows survive and thrive, including Film Sack, by giving just a little bit per month at patreon.com/frogpants.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.